News Talk Breakfast with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
In association with AIR.
Weekday mornings at 7 on News Talk.
Ring of Salt, a memoir of finding home and hope on the wild coast of Ireland, is the powerful new memoir from author Betsy Cornwell. And in this case, it does exactly what it says on the tin. It is all about finding home and hope on the wild coast of Ireland. And Betsy's with me now. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat. Thank you for having me.
Now, people will listen to your voice and say, she is not from the West.
That is true. Yes.
So tell us a little bit about your previous life before you came to Ireland and why you did.
Absolutely. Yeah, my accent always gives me away. So I grew up in New Hampshire, just north of Boston, and I came to the Aran Islands when I was 24 to work on my first book. So I have 6 books published. Most of them are fantasy novels, and I came to do some research on Irish mythology and do some work exchange on the Aran Islands.
So your reason for picking Ireland, of all the gin joints in all the world, it could have been any island anywhere, but you had a particular reason for coming to Ireland.
Absolutely. So people always assume that I came because of having Irish heritage, which wasn't the case. I came because I had done a master's degree in creative writing at the University of Notre Dame, which has a lot of Irish connections.
Sure.
I had taken some Irish studies courses there, and I was really interested in Irish mythology, especially the Selkie Bride story, which has been wonderfully done by Cartoon Saloon with the film Song of the Sea, and is a really interesting layered story, and one that I work with a lot in my memoir. Yeah.
Okay. Now, I remember when I was in Georgia Tech, we played the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame, and they all had Italian names.
Anyway, yes.
That's only by the way. Now, you obviously fell in love, mm-hmm. and you married, and that was, I feel like, the beginning of this story.
Yes. So the book really begins after I came to the islands and I fell in love, married an Irish man, and we had a baby. And that did, unfortunately, become a dangerous relationship. And so I had to flee my home with our child on his first birthday. And that's where the book begins, is when we had to leave our home.
Now, in terms of maybe suspecting that it might become abusive, was there never any suspicion before you married?
I don't think so. You know, and that's one of the reasons that I really wanted to tell the whole story of that relationship in this book, because I think a lot of stories about survivorship and abuse kind of begin when things have already gotten really bad. And I think people like to tell themselves that they wouldn't get into an abusive relationship. So I wanted to kind of share the story of falling in love with my husband in a way that a reader might relate to, because I think that's one of the things that keeps people ashamed in talking about domestic violence, is this idea that, oh, I should have known better, you know?
Yeah. And then the growing paranoia when you leave, he could be anywhere.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. That, I think that's one of the most frightening things about emotional abuse and coercive control, is this sort of feeling that you're being watched, or not knowing if you're being watched, and sort of an abuser will often tell a victim that they're irrational. And so I think you're sort of, you get into that mindset where you're judging yourself for your own paranoia, even when it is in fact rational. And so you're sort of caught up in this painful confusion. And I think confusion and gaslighting are such a huge part of abuse and coercive control that can affect people just as much as like physical violence can.
Now, you're a young mother, and I mean, therefore you're vulnerable anyway, because you've got L plates on.
Yes. Yeah. So I learned after I came to Ireland that I had to sort of do my driver's ed all over again and all of those things. So I was sort of right. I was
talking about L plates as a mother.
Oh, of course. Sorry. Yes. I talk a lot about my driving experience in Ireland. Sorry. But right. No, I think when you become a mom, it is a really vulnerable time. And I think in a lot of relationships, it is a time when statistically the likelihood of domestic violence increases. I think a lot of you know, and obviously abuse can happen to anyone of any gender, but a lot of the time I think new fathers can feel sort of threatened by a new mother sort of putting their child first and not being the first priority in a woman's life anymore. And that can lead to sort of an increase in a desire to control when a new mother is at a particularly vulnerable time in her life. And so I think a lot of the other survivors that I've met, things got worse in their relationship after they had children.
Yeah, the guy feels displaced in some way.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So when the time came to leave, how difficult was that?
It was very difficult. I think one of the things that I wanted to talk about is that I still loved my husband very much. And I think that's one of the things as well as the huge sort of practical and logistical reasons that someone might not be able to leave a relationship. You also, you know, you love this person, and I had and still have a lot of sympathy for why he feels the way he feels. And one of the most helpful things that I learned from the Domestic Violence Center in Galway, COPE, that offered me so much support, one of the things that my support person taught me was to try not to focus on why an abuser is doing something, but just to react to what he's doing in ways that will protect you and your child. Because I think if I stay focused on why is he behaving this way, it would have been so much harder to extricate myself.
Now, you discovered a safe refuge, which is still in reconstruction. But tell me about your first glimpse of the Knitting Factory, and where is it, and what state was it in?
Yeah, so we were after we left our family home, I was briefly homeless. I thankfully had some friends who were able to take us in for a little while, but we experienced a lot of housing insecurity, my child and me, as do so many people in Ireland right now. And so when he would wake me up, when my baby would wake up in the middle of the night, I would scroll through real estate listings on my phone to sort of have something to dream about, you know. And I came across this knitting factory that was built in 1906 in Connemara and was on sale for years without a buyer. And so I eventually wrote to the owner and asked to rent it for a little while and try to raise the price of the sale, which the farther away I get from that, the more I think it was a completely bananas thing to try to do. But it did end up working. And that's what my book is about, you know.
Now, a knitting factory set up in 1906. Can you, I mean, you've researched it now, so you know what went on. Can you describe what went on in a knitting factory back in the day?
Absolutely. So it was a space for young local women to come and learn to knit. They knit lace, they knit Erin jumpers. And it was sort of presented to me in the real estate listings as almost a charitable organization that was sort of teaching women these life skills and they'd have their own money for the first time. But I learned later that it was built by the Congested Districts Board for Ireland, which was a branch of the Conservative Party in the UK, and that their own stated design for creating buildings like the old knitting factory was to kill home rule through kindness. So they were sort of trying to create social programs in Ireland that would convince the Irish people that they didn't need independence from Britain, which it was fascinating to me, especially as someone coming out of a relationship involving coercive control.
Because killing home rule with kindness.
Yes.
Extraordinary.
yes.
Tell me about the demise then of the knitting factory. What went wrong for it?
Sure. So I think, you know, then when Ireland did become an independent republic, a lot of those programs that had been run through the British government were sort of taken apart, and the knitting factory sort of met its demise in that way. But then it's allowed the building to have a lot of really interesting reincarnations in the time since. My favorite one is that in the 1970s, it became the world's first Irish language cinema. And one of my long-term goals for the Knitting Factory is to be able to show Irish language films there again someday.
How big is it?
Not very big. I think the word factory is kind of misleading. It's basically a cottage, you know. So there's room for myself and my kid and then one family at a time for these residencies that I do there.
Now, explain what your ambition is for the Knitting Factory. As I say, it's currently under reconstruction. You've got the builders in to sort
yes,
things out.
Yes, we have big renovations, deep retrofit happening right now. So basically, my dream for the Knitting Factory has always been to make it into a family home for myself and my child, but also a childcare inclusive funded arts residency space for other single parents. And that is something that I have done every year since we bought the house. But I have never felt able to open fully because it's an old, weird house that needs a lot of renovations. And I was really working hard to make those renovations happen by the time this book came out. So I'm delighted to say that as of about a month ago, we are getting those big renovations done.
By the way, are you a knitter?
I am. Oh, I love to knit. Yes. I learned to knit when I was 8 from my grandfather who learned to knit in the army.
So this is incredibly serendipitous.
It is. Yeah. And that's actually the original title of the book was The Old Knitting Factory. My editor felt there wasn't enough knitting content to justify that title, but I do like to knit. So
now, how are you as your little family now together?
Wonderful. I'm delighted to say my son is 8 now. He's in a Gael school. He's fluent in Irish, which makes me really proud. I only have a couple of focal myself, but I'm working on it, you know. And I really wanted to tell the story of leaving domestic violence that had a happy ending. And I hope that's what this book is.
I'm looking at some of the pre-release reviews you've got, and they're sensational.
I have been thrilled by them. Absolutely. Yeah.
Betty Cornwell has written a wondrous book, free of the pitfalls of sentimental and saccharine prose. And that's for sure. Your prose is wonderful.
Thank you so
Virtually
much.
Poetic.
Thank you. That means a lot.
It's called Ring of Salt, a memoir of finding hope and hope on the west coast of Ireland. And it's written by Betsy Cornwell. And Betsy, thank you very much for joining us in studio today. By the way, if you've been impacted by anything you've been listening to, you can contact Women's Aid free phone helpline 1-800-341-900.
News Talk Breakfast with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
In association with AIR.
Weekday mornings at 7 on News Talk.